Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
Listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, and happy Halloween. I'm Steve Chiathakis. We're walking under an arch covered in vines, and in the distance I see a graveyard. Tombstones cover the lawn, and a tree is staring back at me with a sinister smile. Wait a minute. This is just a front yard in Tarzana, the least spooky place you can think of.
We have a friend from high school, and one year that friend said, we should decorate for Halloween. How my house got nominated, I don't know, but it got nominated, so we put a couple of things up and decided I wanted to do it again.
Every year, Julie Boss and her family go all out to dress up this front yard. And you can find their address on an online list, the SoCal Haunt List, which tracks Halloween displays that are free to visit, if you dare. KCRW's Andrea Bautista talked to the list creator and found that L.A. Is creepier than you think.
Halloween is Derek Young's favorite holiday, hands down. He says the holiday was a night of freedom when he was a kid.
I'm a little bit older. I grew up in a period where it was okay to kind of let your kids run through the neighborhood and go door to door asking for candy, and you didn't feel like you had to worry so much.
One of his favorite childhood memories was a costume his father made him when he was in fourth grade.
My father worked in the movie industry, and so when I said to him, Dad, I want to be a tombstone for Halloween, he was like, I got it, no problem. And like showed up at home the following day with this like cardboard box that had been made to look like stone, and it had a hole for my head and arms and whatever, and it was like the most uncomfortable costume ever. But I love it, like to this day.
And it's that Halloween spirit that fueled his creation of the SoCal Haunt List. It's basically a catalog of homes that put on intricate Halloween displays every year. That first unofficial list Young created back in 2013 only had 9 houses, mostly in the San Fernando Valley. It grew after he shared it with a group of friends who love Halloween as much as he does.
It quickly went from 9 houses to 25 houses to 50 houses, and this morning I checked the list. It's 277.
Over 200 homes, from as far as Santa Clarita all the way down to San Diego. Young says that number will likely creep up to 300. Young used to print it and hand it out himself. Now you can add your own haunt on the SoCal Haunts website.
So it's everything from yard displays, walkthroughs, haunted shows, because some people will do like a show that repeats multiple times every night. And then we have the occasional paid attraction.
Because there are so many haunts to choose from, I asked Young for the ones I had to visit. With my Rex in hand, I braved the 405 traffic and headed to Tarzana for the first stop.
Because I do think of some of this stuff as like art, especially the newer tombstones. There's a lot of effort put into that.
That's Julie Boss. She loves Halloween so much that she makes her own props and decorates nearly every inch of her front yard. From the sidewalk, you won't be able to see much except trees and bushes. The real treat lies behind all the shrubbery. When you walk in, you're surrounded by tombstones. A ghost floats nearby inside a mausoleum. Boss and her husband, Stacey Roselle, have been decorating their home for Halloween since 1991.
I just keep wanting to do it, even though it's getting harder as we get older. I think about the fact that we were so young when we started, and here we are still going.
Boss says she sees their haunt as a mystical place, where strange and mysterious things happen.
So we do a pretty ambiance feeling haunt. No jump scares, no gore. So it's appropriate for all ages. There's a lot of subtle effects. And so it's something that you can spend a long time looking at. You might find something new.
Like maybe you'll spot a lantern floating slowly on its own. Stacy Roselle says when visitors notice those little things, it's exciting.
We've had many people who look through our haunt and then they come back and they're like, is that really moving or is that, you know? The mind sees stuff that we don't realize we see, but it hits us later. And that's some of the fun stuff.
Let's hop back on the freeway and head to Woodland Hills, where a house has transformed for the night into a haunted theater. It's pitch black out here, but it's not hard to spot what I'm looking for. The house is glowing, and it sounds like a show is about to begin.
Halloween, 1939. Julietta's wedding night.
This is the home of married couple Matt Ford and Lori Merkel. They combine moving props, light projections, and special effects to tell a ghostly story. Merkel says she came up with the Hollywood-inspired storyline for the show in 2007.
Basically, a Hollywood starlet marries a director in the hopes of becoming famous. Turns out the director actually has a past that we don't really know about. And a past wife, past daughter who have disappeared. And their spirits haunt this house, the house at Haunted Hill.
The story involves a dead wife and daughter who hang around.
And as Julietta comes into the picture to marry Lily, who was the original wife, comes to give Julietta quite a hard time.
Creepy, right? SoCal Hauntless creator Derek Young says he knows the amount of effort it takes to decorate a house and says it's scratching an artistic itch for a lot of people, himself included.
While I don't do costumes and things like that anymore, I derive that same level of enjoyment from like creating experiences for people. And for me, Halloween is just another opportunity to kind of like create those types of memories for people.
So the next time you spot that spooky house on your street, take a minute to thank the hosts who make Halloween in LA so spine-chilling. For KCRW, I'm Andrea Bautista.
Moving on now with Greater LA on this All Hallows Eve. The Southland is home to famous ghost stories and murderous, hair-raising tales of terror. From the unsolved mystery of the Black Dahlia to the haunted decks of the Queen Mary, you don't have to go far to find a spine-tingling tale to sink your teeth into. And in the spirit of this horrific holiday, we asked you to share your creepiest and unexplainable true stories. So today on Greater LA, we're sharing three of them with you.
I was in London on a vacation in May of 1983 and visiting friends and seeing the wonderful city. And one night I had a dream about my mother, which, you know, you dream about lots of things and you don't remember most of the dreams, but in the middle of the night, my bedroom door opened and the light came in and I could see my friend outlined in the light with it behind her. And I sat up straight. I was sound asleep. I sat up straight and I said, it's okay. I know she's gone. I know she's gone. Back in Los Angeles, my mother had passed away. So she came to say goodbye in that dream. I'm convinced of that. It took the edge off of her having to tell me that my mother passed away. So it was quite an experience that every once in a while I think about it and think, wow, you know, she came and said goodbye even though I was that far away from her. My friend, she was kind of more in shock than I was, in a funny way, because she had received the bad news, knew she had to tell me, and then she goes in to tell me, and I'm like, okay, I know she's gone. And that's why I say now that processing it now instead of just saying, ooh, I was so psychic, ooh, I had a spooky experience. I think older now that I think, what a darn nice thing for Mom to do, you know? To just kind of do it right to the end, she was taking care of me. So I look at it that way now, you know, and it was an amazing experience. It was spooky, but I prefer now to just think that was a nice thing for Mom to do.
When I first moved to Los Angeles, I was working at a post-production facility in the old EMI Records building on La Cienega. Everyone had recorded there back in the day. Janis Joplin, The Doors, you name it.
People are strange when you're a stranger. Faces look ugly when you're
alone. So, of course, the place was supposed to be haunted. I'd been there for a year and didn't believe it. All the stories had an urban legend quality to them. I heard this from someone who used to work here, that sort of thing. But no one seemed to ever have a direct experience themselves. And I surely never had anything weird happen. At least, not until I did. I was picking up extra shifts as weekend security. I'd come in Saturdays and Sundays, noon to midnight. I was the only one there and just on site to accept deliveries and make sure no one tried to break in. It was a creepy place to be in by myself, especially with all the soundproofing, which just kind of makes the air feel weird and dead. But I'd been doing the weekend gig for months, and nothing strange had ever happened. Then this one night, the phone rings. I answer, and no one's on the line. I look down at the switchboard, and the red light is flashing next to the button for the machine room. The call is coming from inside the building. So I punch up the machine room on the monitor. No one's there. Worried someone might have broken in, I grab this big steel mag light we had sitting at the desk and go to check it out. I search the whole building, all three floors, and the underground parking deck. No one is in this building. All the doors are locked, and the alarms are armed. So thinking it's a problem with the phone, I go back to my desk. About 20 minutes later, the phone rings again. This time it's from the tiny break room next to the machine room, one room closer to me. So I go through the whole process again, punch it up on the monitor, search the building, nothing. I am alone in this place. This continues all night. Every 20 minutes or so, I get a phone call, each one coming from a room closer to me. The calls moving through the building toward my desk, toward me. So the other guard is scheduled to come in to relieve me at midnight, and I'm just counting the minutes at this point, trying not to get too creeped out. It's about 11:45 when the final call comes in. This call is from the client phone on the other side of the lobby, a phone I can see about 10 feet away from me. I'm looking at it as it calls me, and no one is there. So my relief comes in at midnight. He's this old guy from Kentucky. Hey, Tennessee, he always says, which is where I'm originally from. Hey, Kentucky, I tell him, there's something weird going on with the phone, so it may ring on you all night. Trying to convince myself at this point it's a mechanical or electrical issue. So I go home and get some sleep. By the time I come back to relieve him at noon the next day, I'm sure he'll tell me that it rang all night and it was nothing other than some kind of technical issue going on. So I walk in, hey, Kentucky, how many times did the phone ring on you last night? Man, that phone didn't ring once, he says. Whatever was going on, it only happened to me. What still creeps me out about this is that the pattern of the calls moving through the building implies to me that there was some kind of intelligence at work behind it. And for some reason, that intelligence only targeted me.
So I grew up in the San Fernando Valley, Pacoima specifically. I was about 7 years old or so, and any other, like, just garden variety day of pre-adolescence, just my friend and I running around, like, cooking up just the right amount of mischief. We were in my backyard, and we were testing the very limits of how far we can swing on a hammock. And then one time, we just went a little bit too far, and we did like a triple somersault, and then through the air we flew. My friend landed on a cushy patch of grass while my head was wanged on a rock. And I'm just lying on the ground, kind of writhing and disoriented, and I'm sure very sincerely concussed. But then I feel my head being gingerly cradled in my friend's lap. He starts like kind of touching like the wound on the side of my head, and he starts singing this song, this very gentle, soft song. And the adrenaline completely dissipates, and I'm no longer like in a sense of panic, and I just kind of feel kind of comforted, kind of maybe womb-like even. Who the heck was that ethereal being with the angelic set of pipes? Eventually, like a couple of days goes by, and then I'm talking to him again. I'm like, that was a weird moment we had there. Why, of all things, do you kind of just kind of comfort me in that way, like a World War I nurse or something? I'm just looking deeply in your eyes and falling in love, perhaps. But no, he tells me, like, no, I don't know what you're talking about at all. The moment your head hit the ground, I ran inside to call your mother. Maybe it was just this year's head trauma talking, or maybe angels do make the commute from Anaheim on occasion to patrol the ragtag streets of Pacoima.
That's Catherine Lydon, Brad Hodson, and Tommy Bowie. And special thanks, by the way, to our engineers, Phil Richards and John Meek, for adding some wonderful sound design to those spooky stories. More Greater LA on the other side of this.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA from KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. There is a tight congressional race where the candidates are vying for District 47. That's the wealthy district on the coast down in Orange County. Democratic Congresswoman Katie Porter, known for her whiteboards while grilling witnesses in the House, is going up against former state assemblyman and former OC GOP chair Scott Baugh. In recent years, the county went from red to blue to now a purple hue. So what does that mean for this year's congressional race there? To break it all down, Gustavo Arellano is here. He's a columnist for the LA Times, one of our regulars, of course, on GLA. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Let's start with Porter. She was an attorney, a professor over at UC Irvine, was elected to Congress in 2018 in that big blue wave that took all of the congressional districts in Orange County. I feel like a lot of folks know her from those online videos of the whiteboards that I mentioned to you, especially during COVID, asking tough questions of CEOs. I mean, what is she running on for re-election?
Well, she's running as being this progressive voice in Orange County and part of that wave that did turn Orange County blue in 2018. And she's also running, frankly, as the nemesis to the Republican Party in Orange County specifically. It used to be that position used to be held by Loretta Sanchez for a long, former congresswoman from Santana for a long, long time. And now it's Katie. They've tried to throw opponents against her. They try to throw all these things against her, and she just swats them down like nothing. So the fact that Scott Baugh, the former chair of the OC GOP, is now running, it's like, okay, this is going to be a race that's going to be very fun to watch.
Scott Baugh, of course, as you mentioned, the head of the GOP there. He was also an attorney. He served in the California Assembly as well. So voters, at least in that area, know who he is. What else should they know about Baugh's track record?
I mean, he is the old Orange County, no matter what he might say that, oh, you know, I'm not like the GOP of the past. No, very much so. This is a guy who says he's fundamentally opposed to gay marriage, although he supports, you know, the social contracts that go with it. He would not sign off to any laws that allow abortion after the first trimester. He comes from the 90s era Republicans, which used to call themselves the cavemen. That's literally their nickname for themselves. And he kind of disappeared for a couple of years. So when I heard that he was running against Katie, I'm like, wow, blast from the past.
Let's talk about the district real fast before we get to the issues in the district. Number one, District 47 is a little different than it was when Katie Porter won in 2018. Explain that.
Yeah, so when Katie was elected in both 2018 and 2020, it was more of a central, like central Orange County, but in the southern part. So very much the city of Irvine. You got the city of Laguna Beach, like some of the liberal, more blue areas. But with gerrymandering, what happens all the time between Republicans and Democrats, all of a sudden this district now extends from Seal Beach down to about Laguna. So that means Republican Seal Beach, very Republican Huntington Beach, even more Republican Newport Beach. So this is going to be a harder election for Katie to pull off. She still has Irvine, though, and also gets Costa Mesa, which is a little bit more bluer. But this is why you're seeing Katie spend so much money on ads. Like, I watch Channel 9 News. I'm just seeing these commercials slamming Scott Baugh again and again and again in a way I've never seen commercials for Katie before.
And the issues that everybody's thinking about right now, I mean, there are several, obviously. Democracy is top of mind on a lot of folks' radar, but also inflation. Now, we see that as well. You know, things are more expensive. How did those things factor into this race going into, gosh, a week from tomorrow?
Yeah, well, one of the things that Katie has always run on is like, yeah, she's a UCI law professor, but she literally drives a minivan with her kids. Like, she's taken videos on it to, you know, she tries to put herself as, I'm very much like these middle-class voters and their concerns in Orange County. Scott Baugh, on the other hand, it's interesting because you might want to call Katie part of the establishment, but Scott Baugh was literally the conservative Republican establishment in Orange County for over 20 years. I mean, helping on campaigns before he started running as well. So obviously, when it comes to issues of inflation, they're both going to, you know, Katie's going to say, we got to support Biden. We got to support what, you know, the Democrats are pushing. And Baugh, on the other hand, is going to say, it's all their fault. We need to go back to basics, whatever that may be. So it's really going to depend on how, what the voters think is going to be the salvation. Not even, it's not so much a referendum on the individual so much as it is on Republicans versus Democrats overall.
Is it a microcosm, do you think, of purple OC? I mean, it's not fully blue. It's not fully red. That's what's happening in OC.
Oh, absolutely. If Katie wins, then the Democrats still continue on their effort to make this land where President Reagan infamously said all the good Republicans go to die, turn it into blue. But if Baugh wins, watch out for that comeback, Democrats. And that means the Republicans have been just, you know, angry that there's even a Democratic Party in Orange County winning. And so Baugh, it's interesting, though, to have Baugh on it, because Baugh has sometimes turned against the party. But in this non-bipartisan age, you're going to go with red if you're red, and you're going to go blue if you're blue.
Gustavo Arellano, columnist at the LA Times. Gustavo, as always, thanks.
Gracias.
By the way, you can find out more about what's on the ballot this year by checking out our midterm voter guide. It's at the website, kcrw.com. And while you're at the website, tell us how you're doing. And, of course, subscribe to the podcast, too, all there at kcrw.com/GLA. Or you can just grab the podcast pretty much anywhere. KCRW election coverage, by the way, continues tomorrow with a look at housing measures on the City of L.A. ballot. A couple of them, ULA and LH. We'll have more on that tomorrow on Greater L.A. Hope you'll tune in. Jenna Cagle, Juliana Mayo, Phil Richards, John Meek, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Holly Adams, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Happy trick-or-treating. And happy Halloween to you. Thank you for your ears. Have a great night.